All right, I don't know about you, but I'm sick to death of Job's friends. Studying their comments today, I thought, you know, they're preaching the same sermon. You know, you've got all of his friends, and every one of them's preaching the same sermon. And there are three cycles on this sermon. There are three, it goes, each of them has three shots. And tonight we hope we'll finish up with the second cycle of all of his friend's sermon. And after I finished studying in depth today, this second round, I thought, I'm not even going to teach the third. I am so discouraged with Job and all the friends he's got. I mean, they're just getting meaner and meaner. And so keep that in mind. Just keep in mind the fact that it's the book of Job that helps us understand some things that happen in our life that even Job did not understand. As far as we know, Job did not know chapters 1 and 2. Just all of this problem happened to Job, and it is wrong. Yes, Dave? And that's why the Bible holds him up such a sterling example. Take my brethren as a man of patience. Take the example of Job and all that he went through. And I don't know if you heard Dave's comment, but that's where everybody does. You know, if good thing happens, God doesn't get any credit. But you let somebody that's weak in faith or who has no belief in God at all. Well, I don't believe in God because the first atheist I think ever met said, God would not have let that mule kick my 9-year-old brother. And so the guy, he made a decision whenever his brother was 9 years old or so, or may have been a little bit older brother. And he made a decision, there cannot be a God because my brother got kicked in the head by a mule. Well, that's really not deep thinking in relationship to it, you know. But we need to keep that in mind. Now then, I wanted us last week to get through a chapter 15, but we didn't even get through 14. Let's go to Job chapter 14 and let's get to that point. We've talked about Zophar and his speech, and so we're not going to rehearse at all. Let's start immediately, and let's go to Job's monologue. That's point number G in the survey of Job. I think we're all on the same page and the same screen. What's Job going to say? Well, let's look at what's on the screen there, and then we'll look down and see some of this. Give me a chance to catch my breath is the way we've decided these first six verses. The next two, it's better to be a tree than to be Job. And then Job longs for a resurrection, so there's no resurrection, so look at the present. Now let's go back to point number one. You can back up three slides if you want to and just sort of follow me through in relationship to this. But if you look at Job, Job is of the opinion that I've just had more than I can stand. Have you ever been there? Have you ever in your life just thought, this is it, I cannot take any more? And the statement I think we made one time recently is, God won't tempt us above where all we're able to bear. But have we not all at least sometimes thought, well, maybe God's view of myself and my strength is different from where I am. You know, God, I don't feel like I'm strong enough to deal with what's happening. And then the next day, something else happens. You understand what I mean? Which shows us that we are not exactly where we need to be in relationship to this. Verse 1, man that is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. Now, I like that's interesting. Every day is full of trouble. And look down. I'm going to skip down to verse 5. Look at verse 6. Look away from him that he may rest till like a hired man he finishes his day. He's talking to God. God, give me room. I've got all of these things happening in my life, and we're going to look at about six or seven verbs that he used in relationship to what God has brought upon him and what God does. And then he says, God, just give me time. If I can just get away from this. You understand that attitude? That's exactly where Job is. Just as oppressed as he can be, and I'd just give anything. And then he says, there's hope for a tree. Job, do you have any hope? Well, Job's almost without hope. In fact, as you read this, you're going to find out just how despondent Job is. And the reason we put the heading here, it's better to be a tree than to be Job. And because he says, here's a tree, and if you cut it down, that's in verse 7, If it's cut down, it will sprout again, and its tender shoots will not cease. Its roots may grow old in the earth, and its stump may die in the earth. Yet at the scent of water, it will bud and bring forth branches. But man dies and is laid away. You know, I wish there was more to life. And so he says, you know, if a man dies, shall he live again? And that's exactly where Job looks at him and says, look in verse 11. He says, as water disappears from the sea and a river becomes parched and dries up, so a man lies down, does not rise. There's hope for a tree, but I'm not even sure about the resurrection. And we'll see that he does have faith in the fact that someday he'll be justified. And then he said, and this is the prayer, oh, that you would hide me in the grave, that you would conceal me until you're not mad at, until your wrath is not here anymore. I'd rather be dead than to exist in the situation in which I find myself. And Lord, go ahead and put me in the grave until your wrath is past, and that you would, then that you would appoint me a set time and remember me. If a man dies, shall he live again? That's where Job is. And it may be that there have been times in your life that you just thought, I just wish it were all over. I'm not talking about being suicidal. I'm just talking about the fact that the pressures of this earth. He says, all the days of my hard service I will wait, because change is coming till change comes. He says, you call, that's verse 15, and I will answer. Number 16, verse 16, you number my steps, but do not watch over my sins. My transgression is sealed up in a bag, and you cover my iniquities. And if a mountain falls and crumbles away, and as a rock is moved out of its place, as water wears away stones, and as torrents wash away the soil of the earth, you destroy the hope of man. Is he despondent? Yeah. Now here's the question. Is he blaming God? No. In all of this, Job did not charge God foolishly. He's ignorant about some things, but he is never saying God, you know, he's just saying, how on earth, you know, why is this happening in my life? And he says, you know, the burdens that I have, they're like a water wearing away stones and torrents washing away the soil to the earth. And so you destroy the hope of man. You, God, prevail forever against him, and he passes on. You change his countenance and send him away. His sons come to honor, and he does not know it. Why? He's dead. They are brought low, and he does not perceive it. But his flesh will be in pain over it, and his soul will mourn over it. Job, how do you feel? The way we have felt. You've been there. I remember a widow in this church when I first came down, talking about the death of her husband. And I remember she says, why God? Why me? Those two words, those two questions just penetrate. Why? And that's Job. Well, you want to look at the next chapter? Eliphaz comes on to the scene, and he says, should a wise man answer with empty knowledge and fill himself with the east wind? I think he's talking about Job, don't you? Job, you think you're a wise man, but all you do is just spouting out stupidity. And you're just like the east wind. Should he reason with unprofitable talk, or by his speeches with which he can do no good? Job, everything you said is unprofitable. You haven't said one thing that's profitable. He says, the speeches that you make are not accomplishing anything. And he says, your iniquity teaches your mouth. You see that in verse 5? Your iniquity teaches your mouth. What he's saying is, Job, everything's coming out of your mouth is wrong. It's sinful. Now, there is an element of truth in this, not because of he said it, because the Bible says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. You let somebody use profanity and disrespect of Almighty God in their speech, I'll guarantee you what their heart is like and their attitude toward God. I mean, it's that. But this, what he says, there's an element of truth in it, but the mouth he's talking about here is Job. Job, just quit speaking, shut your mouth. Your own mouth condemns you and not I. Yes, your own lips testify of you. Job, verse 7, are you the first man who's ever had problems? Are you the first man who was ever born? Or were you made before the hills were made? Have you heard the counsel of God? Do you not limit wisdom to yourself? Job, not one word you've said has any wisdom in it because you haven't even been talking to God. Now keep in mind, we get to the end of this book, God says, Eliphaz, you're wrong. What Job says is right. But Eliphaz understands it whenever he said, have you heard the counsel of God? Do you limit wisdom to yourself? That's, I think, when I read that verse, all I think about is just the religious division there is in America. You stop and think about it. If wisdom only comes in my understanding of the Bible, what I believe to be right in the Bible, I haven't been listening to the counsel of God. That's not what the friend is saying. I like verse 10. The gray-haired and the aged are among us, much older than your father. This gives us a little bit of indication about the age of his friends. You know this proverb, the hoary, the white hair is an honor, is a crown of honor. If it's what? I think that's something like that. If it's connected with the wisdom of God. But he just says, look at our hair. We're wise. Look how old we are. Listen to us. We're old enough to be your father. Job, will you just shut up and listen to what we got to say? Now, young men and young ladies who are in this class, someday I want you to understand, you'll be that old man that people be talking about you that way. So be careful about what you say. But he says, we're old enough to be your father. The interesting thing is, there's a fourth friend. And the fourth friend's opening remarks are, I'm not old enough to talk, but what you old men have said is so wrong, I've got to talk. And it's real interesting. Here these old men said that we've got all the wisdom. And then he says, you know, are the consolations from God, are they too small from you? And the word spoken gently with you, why does your heart carry away? And why does your eye wink at it that you turn your spirit against God? Wow! Don't you wish you'd have friends that come and say, Job, here's the problem. You've just turned against God. You don't need friends like that, do you? Ever been in a situation where people came to give you advice and you just wanted to slap them in the face? You know? That's not where he comes from. And I love the fact he said earlier in this book, you are physicians of no value. You're trying to doctor me, and it's quack medicine. That's what he's saying. You are physicians of no value. He says, verse 15 is rather interesting. If God puts no trust in his saints and the heavens are not pure in his sight, how much less man who is abominable and filthy, who drinks iniquity like water? You know the man he's talking about? What when he says this, man is abominable and filthy and drinks sin like he drinks water? He's talking about Job. If you thought the first round of speeches were bad, you wait till we get to the third round. You know, you ever see somebody, ever get in a discussion with somebody and they curse a little bit, and then you don't respond the way they think you ought to respond, they curse a little bit more, and about the third time through, they're using words you never even heard. That's about this kind of thing that is happening right here. He begins in verse 18 to talk about the wisdom that comes from the fathers. And so he mentions particularly what wise men have told, not hiding anything received from their fathers, to whom alone the land was given and no alien passed among them. The wicked man writhes in pain. Job, do you know
what the fathers have taught us? The fathers have taught us that wicked men writhe in pain. Job, you're writhing in pain. If you would just listen to the wisdom of the fathers, you'd know this. The wicked man writhes in his pain. Look at the wicked man described. I highlighted the wicked man writhes in his pain. Next thing I underline is in verse 22. He does not believe that he will return from darkness. Verse 23, he wanders about for bread. Verse 24, trouble and anguish make him afraid. He stretches out his hands against God. And in verse 26, he says, running stubbornly against him, against God, with his strong embossed shield. Though he has covered his face with fatness and his waist is heavy with fat, he dwells in desolate cities and houses that no one inhabits, which are destined to become ruins. Job, here is truth. The only people on this earth that have trouble are wicked people. Now, Job's going to answer him in a minute. Job said, I know a lot of wicked people, and you do too, that prosper. But this man is so obsessed with Job and wanting Job to just confess what his sins were and to own up to his iniquity that he's attacking Job every way. He says, verse 29, the wicked man, still talking about the adjectives that describe the wicked man, he will not be rich, nor will his wealth continue. What's just happened to Job? He's lost it all, hasn't he? And Job, our fathers who've been on this land, and listen, we're old, and we're passing along to you the wisdom that that came from the fathers, and now we are old enough, you know, we may be talking about four or five, fifth generation wisdom, and if they lived as long as Methuselah, it may be many more numbers greater than that. I know Methuselah was before the flood. Look at verse 31. Let him not trust in futile things, deceiving himself, for futility will be his reward. It will be accomplished before his time, the text says. Job, if you would just honor God, everything would be all right, but you have no desire to honor God. Look at Job, he says, verse 34. For the company of hypocrites will be barren, and fire will consume the tents of bribery. Who's he talking about? Remember early in chapter 1, the things that happened to Job, was not fire involved in some of those very things? They're right there in his faith saying, Job, just admit that you are wrong. They conceive trouble and bring forth futility. I'm reading verse 35. Their wombs prepare deceit. Job, you're an evil man. And I don't know how you would have responded had you been there at that time and heard all of this stuff going on. If you'd been Job, how you would have responded. I would not have responded like Job. I would have come to my defense much quicker than Job ever thought about coming to his own defense. Let's look at the next chapter. Job answers. And he says something he said before. I have heard many such things. That's verse 2. Miserable comforters are you all. I want you to know that holy men in the Bible speak Southern. Miserable comforters y'all are. I hope you know I'm talking facetiously, but I do love that you all in relationship to that. He says, shall words of wind have an end? He's now talking about their lessons, what they're saying. Or what provokes you that you answer? I could speak as you do. And then here's this principle. If your soul were in my soul's place, I could heap up words against you and shake my head at you. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you who are spiritual, restore such a one, considering what? Yourself. Lest you also be tempted. Job said, guys, I know enough about you. If we were in a different situation, I want you to know that I could be the one that is shaking my head at you. But he says, that's not what I would do. I would strengthen you with my mouth, and the comfort of my lips would relieve your grief. Was it Tuesday morning class? I talked about the values that the world has and how different we are from the world. The response, and Dave, this is what you said at the very beginning. This is a response the world has. And Job said, if this situation were different, there's no way I'd be saying what you're saying. Love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. You know, pray for them that despitefully use you. That's hard. But if you're going to be a Christian, if you want to be a good husband, if you want to be a good wife, a good parent, a good child, put yourself in that other person's place. You know why Job's the man that he is? Because even with all the adversity and all the pain that he has, he's thinking about trying to help them understand what they're doing is not the right thing to do. I'm so thankful that one of the things my mother said to me, and it's funny how the dead still, you know, who are dead are still speaking. But he says, but you always say to me, what would you do? What would you do? What would you want them to do if you were in their place and they were you? You want to be a good Bible class teacher? You want to be a good preacher? You want to be an individual who counsels other people? You want to be one of those aged women, if we could ever get some in the church, aged women who had the ability to teach younger women? You know where the power of that comes from? It comes from putting yourself in the audience whenever you're preaching or teaching a class, or whenever somebody comes to you and asks counsel and advice, putting yourself in their place. That's the hardest thing to do. It's really, really difficult when somebody is just frustrating you like Job's friends are frustrating him to respond the way Job does. Though I speak, verse 6, he says, my grief is not relieved, and if I remain silent, how am I eased? I am trying to say some things just so I might get some sort of mental relief, at least from the things that are happening here. But now he, God, has worn me out, and you have made desolate all my company. All of my company. Job, where's your friends? I don't have a friend left on this earth. You have shriveled me up, and it is a witness against me. My leanness rises up against me and bears witness to my face. He tears me in his wrath and hates me. He gnashes at me with his teeth. His adversity sharpens his gaze upon me. They gape at me with their mouth. They strike me reproachfully on the cheek. They gather together against me. God has delivered me to the ungodly. You know what he's saying? You know what happened just a few days ago? I couldn't think of anything that could be worse than that. Guess what? I have been delivered into the hands of the ungodly. And I have been turned over to the hands of the wicked. I was at ease. He shattered me. He's taken me by my neck and shaken me to pieces and set me up as his target. His archers surround me. He pierces my heart and does not pity. He pours out my gall on the ground. He breaks me with a wound upon wound. He runs at me like a warrior. I'm in verse 16. I have sewn sackcloth over my skin and laid my head in the dust. My face is flushed from weeping, and on my eyelids is the shadow of death. Although no violence was in my hands, and my prayer is pure. Job says, I don't understand this. I'm trying to live right, and I don't have the answer. I really do not have the answer. O earth, do not cover my blood and let my cry have no resting place. Surely even now my witness is in heaven and my evidence is on high. My friends, and I'd put that in quotation mark, the word friends, scorn me. My eyes pour out tears to God. Oh, that one might plead for a man with God as a man pleads with his neighbor. For when a few years are finished, I shall go the way of no return. Oh, that someone might plead for a man with God. What are you guys doing? You're the problem. 17. Chapter divisions get in the way. There's no change in chapter 17 from what we've just read. My spirit is broken. My days are extinguished. The grave is ready for me. Are not mockers with me? And does not my eye dwell on their provocations? Now put down a pledge for me with yourself, he says, evidently to God. Who is he who will shake hands with me? For you have hidden their heart from understanding, therefore you will not exalt them. God, they don't understand. He who speaks flattery to his friends, even the eyes of his children will fail. But he has made me a byword of the people, and I've become one in whose face men spit. My eyes have grown dim because of sorrow. Verse 8, upright men are astonished at this. Verse 10, please come back again, all of you, for I shall not find one wise man among you. My days are past, my purposes are broken off from the thoughts of my heart. They change the night into day, the light is near, they say, in the face of darkness. If I wait for the grave as my house, I will make my bed darkness. If I say to corruption, you're my father, and to the worm, you are my mother and my sister, where then is my hope? If I die, what hope do I have? What hope is there? As for my hope, who can see it? I am headed down to the gates of Sheol, the unseen world. Shall we go down to that place and have rest together? And so Bildad speaks, chapter 18. How long will it be until you stop talking, Job? How long will it be until you put an end to words? Gain understanding, and afterwards, then we can talk. Why are we counted as beasts and regarded as stupid in your sight? You who tear yourself in anger, shall the earth be forsaken for you, or shall the rocks be removed from its place? The light of the wicked goes out. Job, I'm talking about you. God is extinguishing you because you're wicked. Here's the wicked man. Verse 8. He's cast into a net by his own feet, and he walks into a snare. The net takes him by the heel, and a snare lays hold of him. A noose is hidden for him on the ground, and a trap for him in the road. Terrors frighten him on every side and drive him to his feet. His strength is starved. Destruction is already at his side. It devours the patches of his skin. Job, can I tell you how to tell if a man is wicked? The very list of the things I've just read. Job, that's the way we absolutely are sure that you're wicked. I've never studied these speeches like I have this time. They are miserable comforters, Arthur. And it's the same sermon over and over again. Verse 14, he is uprooted from the shelter of his tent. Job, where's your tent? And they parade him before the kings in terror. They dwell in his tent who are none of his. Brimstone is scattered on his dwellings. Job, that's exactly what's happened to you. His roots are dried up below, and his branches wither above. The memory of him perishes from the earth, and he has no name among the renowned. Job, when you die, nobody will ever remember you. And if I right now ask you to name the names of his three friends, you might get two of them. You might get all of them. But that's not the name you remember from Job. Job, you might as well fess up. It's wrong. Verse 19, he's talking about Job. He has neither son nor posterity among his people. How many children did Job have? All 10 of them got killed at one time. You want to know what happens to a wicked man? This is exactly what happens to a wicked man. And the last sentence in verse 21, this is the place of the man who does not know God. And James says, has not God chosen whom? The poor of this world, rich in faith, to be heirs of the kingdom of heaven. Which one are you going to believe? Is poverty a sign that somebody is done wrong in his life? And Job just over and over again says, no, that's not the case. Chapter 19, I don't know if we'll finish this one. How long will you torment my soul? Verse 3. These 10 times have you reproached me. You're not ashamed that you have wronged me. If I have done wrong, my error remains with me because you've not shed any light on it. If you exalt yourself against me and plead my disgrace against me, if you feel like you're better than I am and you exalt yourself above me, know then God has wronged me because I'm not wicked if what you say is right. If I cry out concerning wrong, I'm not heard. If I cry aloud, there is no justice. He has fenced up all my way so that I cannot pass, and he set darkness in my paths. God has stripped me of my glory and taken the crown from my head. That's amazing, isn't it? He breaks me down on every side. My hope, he is uprooted like a tree. He's kindled his wrath against me, and he counts me as one of his enemies. His troops come together. And verse 13, chapter 19, verse 13, he has removed my brothers far away, and my acquaintances are estranged from me. Job, who have you lost? I've lost everything. I've lost my brothers. I've lost my acquaintances. Look in verse 14. I've lost my relatives. I've lost my close friends. They've forgotten me. Verse 15, I have lost those who dwell in my house. I've lost my maidservants, and they've made me a stranger. I'm an alien in their sight. I call my servant, he won't even answer him. My breath is offensive to my wife, and I am repulsive to the children of my body. Even young children despise me. Isn't it great little kids love you? Job said, that's not me. There's nobody, even young children despise me. And verse 19, and those whom I love have turned against me. Verse 23, oh, that my words were written, oh, that they were inscribed in a book. Guess what Job did not know? Job never knew there'd be a book of Job. Job said, I'm going to die, and I won't have my answers. But that doesn't mean that I'm wrong. And so he says, starting in verse 25, I know that my Redeemer lives. And I know that that one who redeems me will stand at last on the earth. After my skin is destroyed, this I know, that in my flesh I'll see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold, and not another. My heart yearns within me. If you say, how shall we persecute him, since the root of the matter is found in me? Be afraid, he says, of the sword of my Redeemer coming against you. Some have looked at this and said, well, maybe Job is fully understands the coming of the Son of God, and that may be the Redeemer he has in mind. Obviously, the New King James has the capital R. But Job says, I've not done wrong, and someday people will know I've done right. And we know because of his Redeemer with a capital R that what Job did was right. That's remarkable in and of itself. I don't know if we've got time to go to the next chapter. Anybody have any comment they want to make at all? Good. Go right ahead and you make it next week, all right? Thank you very much.